Welcome to another exclusive SearchDataManagement.com podcast. I'm Hannah Smaltry, Senior Site Editor of SearchDataManagement.com. Well, today we are talking about DB2 Basics in a podcast designed for people who are new to the world of IBM's DB2 database. We talk to some experts who help us put DB2 in context, explain what makes DB2 unique, and talk about the opportunities available for working as a DB2 professional. So, to learn more, we called the experts at YLNA, a DB2 consulting company and the masterminds behind the DB2Expert.com website. Susan Lawson is one of them. She is an internationally recognized consultant and lecturer with a strong background in system and database administration, who currently works with several large clients to help develop, implement, and tune some of the world's largest and most complex DB2 databases and applications. She also writes articles, white papers, and books, presents at user group meetings, and is an IBM Gold consultant for DB2. Dan Luksetich is a senior DB2 DBA. He works as a DBA, application architect, presenter, author, and teacher. Dan has been in the information technology business for over 22 years and has worked with DB2 for over 18 years. He has been a COBOL programmer, DB2 system programmer, DB2 DBA, and DB2 application architect. His experience includes major implementations on ZOX, AIX, and Linux environments. And we thank both Susan and Dan for making time to talk with us today about DB2. Here's the interview. Today, we are talking with the DB2 experts at YLNA, Dan Luksetich and Susan Lawson. They are DB2 experts. They also produce a hilarious podcast series, Behind the Bar, a detailed look at DB2. And I think they mentioned booze and rock and roll in there, too. Is that right, Dan?
Yeah, that's right. We've got two podcast series. One is called the DB2 Cocktail Hour. There's 17 or 16 of those. And then we have Behind the Bar with the DB2 Cocktail Hour. The original one is features. The newer one, the Behind the Bar one, is specific features of the DB2 for ZOS product.
Cool. And you go through like different features in every different podcast, right? And
yeah, we go through different features in every different podcast, and we give a lot of detailed information. There's also downloads that go along with them as well. So if you want to learn about something like, you know, a feature like multi-row fetch or the explain facility and things like that, you've got not only an audio to listen to, but some visuals to look at, and also, you know, things like program bits of programs and stuff that you can actually test out yourself.
Cool. And we'll put a link to those podcasts on our page because we are not going to go into that much detail today. Today we are talking about DB2 basics. And first of all, let me just tell you why we've chosen to talk to Dan and Susan. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and experience with DB2, Sue?
YLNA has been in business for about 10 years, specializing in DB2 performance and consulting. Between Dan and I, we have close to 40 years experience with the DB2 product, and we also work every day with clients working on design and new architectures for some of the world's largest and most complex databases and applications. And then we also do a lot of troubleshooting and performance audits for companies who need a little bit of extra help, want to get a little bit of extra performance out of their systems. And then we also do training. We do have a whole series of DB2 training for DB2 ZOS and LUW, ranging from SQL to data sharing. So we kind of cover many bases with what we do, and we are very busy, and we have a lot of experience, and we like to share that with our customers, and we, of course, share all these experiences through our websites, papers, and podcasts.
Now, if somebody is brand new to DB2, maybe they took over a DB2 shop or just interested in learning more about it, could you tell us why organizations choose DB2 over some of the other larger databases, Oracle and SQL? What's unique about DB2?
DB2 is a very established database. It has been around since the early 80s, you know, based upon the relational architecture. And the mainframe, as it were, is a very stable platform, very robust, and has been running some of the world's largest shops for many, many years. DB2, of course, on that platform is running some of the world's largest databases. You know, it would be hard to make it through your day without hitting a mainframe DB2 database once, you know, between the ATMs, your insurance, your banking, phone companies, you name it. And it is a very proven platform, very scalable, It's easy to scale these applications and these databases to be very large and support some very fast and very powerful systems. Of course, you've got DB2 on various platforms as well. You've got it on ZOS and Linux, Unix, Windows. So it's very portable and very flexible.
Yeah, there's also a lot of compatibility between the DB2 LUW product and the DB2 ZOS product, which gives customers a lot of flexibility, a lot of leverage in being able to port applications to different platforms without having to make dramatic changes to their code. And the product's very flexible. I mean, you can, you know, I've worked with a DB2 that was embedded in a medical device. I've worked with DB2 Linux systems that were doing financial applications, and DB2 ZOS systems that were doing business intelligence as well as high-volume transaction processing. So there's a lot of flexibility. Also, another thing that we wanted to point out that's different from the other databases is that with the new version of DB2, the Viper version, DB2 9, you now have what they're touting as a hybrid database, XML and relational. Where now, you know, where in the past we had to either store XML documents in one of two ways, either like in a variable length character field or in a blob, or we shredded the documents and stored them relationally, and then we had to rebuild them when we were coming out of the relational database. Now we have an option in DB2 to actually store the XML in an XML data type, index portions of the XML documents in the XML data type, and query in a language that's compatible with XML. And you could put that in combination with tables that are still storing relational data. So it's truly like they advertise it, a hybrid server, the relational world coming together with the XML world.
Oh, that is cool stuff. Now, I think you just touched on some of these terms, but just to ask the question again, I understand there are basically three distinct forms of DB2, the DB2 ZOS, DB2 iSeries, and DB2 LUW. In layman's terms, what are those? Is it just different platforms, or is there more there?
Yeah, there's actually three code bases. The DB2 ZOS product is the most mature. Obviously, the mainframe platform, the architecture there is significantly different than a lot of other computers. And the DB2 ZOS product is married tightly with that architecture. And it really makes it a good, robust, stable, highly available platform. It's, you know, it's the old dependable workhorse. The DB2, then there's the DB2 LUW code base. Now, The DB2 LUW product and the DB2 ZOS product under the covers are completely different products. They have some things that are going on that are the same under the covers, some things that are dramatically different under the covers. Externally, as far as programming interfaces and things like that, they're extremely similar and they have very similar behaviors in that respect. But it's the platforms that they sit on and the way they work with the platforms that they sit on that are different. LUW, DB2 for LUW, it's going to work on, you know, Windows devices, it's going to work on Linux boxes, on a variety of Unix machines, and AIX machines. It's a very robust product. It can be implemented in quite a number of different ways and can be configured as a transaction processor running on a single box to running on a cluster or a massively paralleled environment doing, you know, huge warehouse-type applications and things like that. And then the third product is the DB2 iSeries product. This one is quite a bit different than the others. It's more scaled towards departmental or small business-type applications or possibly a distributed server environment. It has some differences. It doesn't have the same set of SQL language as the other DB2s do, and it has a completely different architecture under the covers.
And are those are sort of the three main forms? There's nothing else that I'm missing? Or...
Right. There's lots of variations on the DB2 for LUW platform. There are other products. There's DB2 EveryPlace, I believe, that runs on various devices. Like I had one running for a while on my Palm Pilot. I don't know if is there any other flavors?
That's still categorized under LUW.
Is it really? Okay. So that's still part of the LUW family.
We still have DB2 VM, VSC, and DB2 for the 400.
That's right, yeah.
But they're not near as popular or as widespread as DB2 ZOS or the LUW platform.
Now, what are some of the common misconceptions that some people have about DB2 that you've run into?
The mainframe is dead. You often hear that people say, oh, you work in DB2, why don't you work in Oracle? You know, no one uses DB2. And that is a very common misconception because of the mainframe perception there, which we don't call it the mainframe anymore. It is a large, powerful server, and it is just like any other server on the wire that you have a database on. And it is a very powerful platform, and as we said before, it's one of the most highly scalable, reliable, secure platforms that we have available today running thousands of businesses. I mean, there are thousands of licenses worldwide running some of the world's most, you know, largest companies, transaction-wise, data-wise, and so on. And, of course, the LUW platform also is very prevalent in the industry and very well regarded as, you know, the same as the ZOS platform, is a highly scalable, flexible, stable platform. And so the misconception that DB2 is not around that we hear all the time, it's too bad because it is one of the most popular databases that we see running the core businesses. A lot of times some of these other platforms are, you see more licenses and more advertisement about them, but maybe they're not running the core business. They're running some back-end applications, whereas the DB2 platform tends to run more of the critical applications in the business. And, you know, sometimes people don't want to talk about what's running their critical, mission-critical applications.
Now, you obviously are very connected with this whole market and space and people. What are some of the latest sort of trends in this area that organizations should really pay attention to?
Oh, my gosh. We're anti-trend. what's the latest buzzword? SOA, right? Service-oriented architecture, a collection of disparate service objects that you can combine together in any fashion to quickly piece together applications. Things like that it's like a blessing and a curse. You deploy such architecture for flexibility, time to delivery, all the benefits that come with rapid application development. And the price that you pay is in database performance, because typically what we find in these implementations is that you get tremendous quantities of SQL statements being issued, each of them doing very little work. Makes for a real challenge to optimize that type of processing in the database environment. So people have to be aware that there are certain trade-offs with this type of architecture and all the flexibility and all the power it gives you to do business and adapt to business quickly. You might be paying more from a database maintenance perspective and a machine cost perspective, or you have to spend a little extra time implementing these toward types of architectures intelligently. The other thing, like we mentioned before, is the XML stuff. I mean, that is extremely interesting, because XML has become a really powerful language for people to share information. You know, think about it. You know, what's the beauty about XML? It is organization of disorganized information, or you could even switch those terms around, right? Disorganization of organized information. And we used to have this real challenge with storing this stuff in databases. Now, IBM has this ability to store XML documents natively inside the database and do things like index them. And that's really important for people that deal with XML. Is it the ultimate in database performance? That's up to your interpretation of what you consider to be performance, right? Because if you have to constantly tear documents apart and put them back together, there's an expense to doing that. But if you could just store a document in the database and index it and pull it out of the database, that might be a performance benefit. Physically inside the database, though, the XML document is stored different than the relational data. So if you're using the XML data together with a relational system and as part of a system in which you're dealing with the XML documents, you might take a, but that might be a performance detriment. You know, it's really a big trade-off. And with any of these technologies, you know, that are on the cutting edge, you have to be aware of those things.
Right, and I've learned that XML is in use in like banking and healthcare, like some of the most mission critical places, though.
Absolutely, yeah. It is a fantastic way to transfer and share information. I worked on one system where they dealt with medical data for patients undergoing cancer treatments, and all of the shipment of information that in and out of the database was done in XML. In the database, it was stored relationally, but outside of the database, it was stored as XML. That way, with XML being stored outside the database, they could share it with other hospitals. They could back it up and restore it independent of the database architecture, and they gave them a lot of flexibility and a lot of power to deal with this data. The same thing is true with banks and stuff. Nobody needs to know the format of anyone else's database. No one has to sit around and discuss the format of a file they're going to transmit. It's all in the document. So you say, okay, I'm sending you over my, you know, this account file, and it's an XML. Somebody gets the account file, everything's tagged, you know exactly what it is. You know, and now the fact that you can take that information and just, you know, throw it into your database, suddenly relate it to other things in your system, is extremely powerful, extremely flexible, and gives us a lot of ability to adapt quickly to, you know, what is a really dynamic business environment.
Cool. Interesting stuff there, too. Now, that's all sort of on the positive, exciting things you can do. Are there any problems? Are there any common DB2 challenges that you see customers face?
A common challenge we often find is resources, especially in our ZOS environment, where a lot of our skilled mainframe technicians are getting a little older, and you know, it's not as popular to be teaching those technologies in the colleges. Some of the older languages and operating system and information is not available anymore. And so we find that people aren't coming on board to this environment at a rate that we need. We need, our customers need people to support these environments and to develop new applications, and often we find we are resource constrained and looking for people and resources for these environments.
But that's a real opportunity then, possibly, for some of our listeners.
Absolutely. You know, I encourage people all the time. We get questions a lot from people in college and such to say, should I pursue a career in DB2, particularly I hear this ZOS term. Is that something new, or what is that, and is that something I should pursue? And I encourage people to do that because it is not a market that's going away. It is definitely a market that the skills are in demand.
Do you enjoy working with DB2? It sure sounds like it.
Well, like I say, you know, both of us have been in this for 20 years doing DB2, and it's a challenge and it's a thrill because we work with some really challenging databases and applications because it gives us the opportunity to go into these really interesting businesses. I mean, we've worked for government, banking, insurance, and then we have some real interesting ones, too. Trying to think of some real...
healthcare. The gaming industry, you know, it really covers this broad spectrum. And, you know, here's another great thing for people. You want to play with it? Go to the IBM website. You can download an enterprise version of DB2 for your PC, for your own personal use. It's completely free.
And the beauty of it is there's so many DB2 licenses and shops out there heavily using this that it takes us around the world and back every year. We've worked in well over 20 countries with DB2. And, you know, who knows how many cities. And
it's a heck of a lot of fun. You know, yeah. You get to try different beers, meet different people. You know.
See the world with DB2. So, I mean, is there a role beyond just being a DBA? That's not the only sort of role you can have in this?
Well, there's application programmers, of course, and DBAs. Architects, it's a fun role with DB2, you know, especially when you're talking about some of the larger databases and your challenges to store terabytes of data. You know, our big challenge today, too, is that more and more people are becoming asked to store large amounts of data, maybe because the business wants it, because the demand is that the information be online accessible, especially like insurance companies where people want to look at their claims online. They want to go back in history or in banking. They want to go back and look at their account, you know, the statements 5 years ago. So we're keeping more and more information online real time. Also, you got HIPAA and Sarbanes-Oxley who are dictating that you will have more of your information kept accessible, not archive it off and forget about it. So those are real challenges today. And so as an architect, dealing with that, it's a lot of fun. It's new. It makes you really have to think and be creative on how to do this.
What other resources are available for people to learn more about DB2 or who want to get more information or get more involved in it? Where would you suggest that they turn?
There's a lot of great resources out there. First of all, the IBM website is, of course, number one, and that is looking at the IBM Red Books that are out there. Those are publications that IBM puts out for free, and they're always putting out new ones, and they're always up to date. They even refresh them periodically with new information, and they have a lot of great resources there. Second, of course, is the conferences. You've got the IDUG, the International DB2 User Group Conference, which is held in the U.S., Europe, Australia, India, and possibly Brazil this year. And that happens yearly. And then you also have IBM's IOD conference, the Information on Demand conference, which has a track for DB2 and is mostly taught by the IBM developers as well as some industry-known consultants. There's also the DB2 listserv, which allows people to, it's a forum for people to ask questions, and then people who are watching, if they know the answer, they can provide that information or provide that person resources to help them. And what else? There's also DB2. There's a DB2 magazine, but I think it's been renamed.
DB2 magazine, Z Journal, IDUG Solutions Journal. There's a number of books out there. Go to Amazon.com, type in DB2, see the list of books. And there's a few help websites out there, a couple of portals and sites that people can go and, you know, a list of white papers and various other downloads.
And, of course, there's our website where we have all of our articles over the last 10 years. We have those out there, links to them. We've also got white papers. We've got code examples. We've got 25 podcasts. We'll be 26 tonight.
And it's all free and anonymous.
It's all free.
You don't have to give us your email or nothing. Just go and take it all.
Any other final thoughts for listeners about this world of DB2?
Oh, sure. You know what? Have a good time. You know, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of challenges. The best thing that you can do is play with it. You know, if you're new to the database, give yourself an hour every day if you can, whether it's at home with the DB2 on your PC or, you know, during your lunch hour at work, have your sandwich at your desk and play around with the database. Try some of these features out. That's how you really learn. I mean, you can read all you want, but until you really try it, and it's really easy to do. It's really easy to set up experiments and things. Lots of easy, languages and things to work with that can get you going in a few minutes. So I highly recommend playing with the thing.
Thank you so much once again, Dan Luksetich and Susan Lawson from YLNA.
And to learn more about YLNA, visit db2expert.com. That is db2expert.com. And that URL is also available on the page where you've downloaded this podcast. And for more insight on DB2, as well as many other data management and business intelligence topics, please do continue to turn to searchdatamanagement.com. And if you have your own DB2 question, story, thought, or idea to share, please email us anytime using the email link on the page where you downloaded this podcast. You have been listening to an exclusive SearchDataManagement.com podcast interview about DB2 Basics. My name is Hannah Smaltry, Senior Site Editor of SearchDataManagement.com. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.